My name's Mackenzie, and I started a GoFundMe for the adoptive mother of a nonverbal autistic child. The mother had lost her job because she wasn't able to find adequate care for this autistic child. So she really needed some help with living expenses, paying some back bills. So I launched a GoFundMe to help support them during this crisis. And we raised about $10,000 within just a couple of months. I think that the surprising thing was by telling a clear story and just like really being very clear about what we needed, we had some really generous donations from people who were really moved by the situation that this family was struggling with.
GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This podcast is supported by GoFundMe.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
About 2 years ago, a TD, junior minister, stood up in the Dáil to answer a question that had been put from Fianna Fáil's Eamon O'Queeve when he struggled to speak. He decided to power on. Moments later, collapsed to the ground. The Dáil was suspended. Fianna Fáil TD Jack Chambers, who is trained as a doctor, rushed over to help him, and he was dispatched to hospital. The junior minister involved is now senior minister, Minister for Arts, Culture, Communications, Media and Sport, and he joins us this morning. Patrick O'Donovan, good morning.
Morning, Anton.
Patrick, walk us through what happened. Eamon O'Queeve raises a question and you stand up. What happens next?
Just to be fair, no, this wasn't Eamon O'Queeve's fault. So it had been a beautiful hot summer's day, and I had a number of things that I was doing in Dublin, and I walked back along from, actually, I was over at News Talk. I was over to your colleague, Ivan Yates.
Not his fault either, I hope.
No, not his fault. I could blame him, but I won't. And the sun was splitting the stones, and there was a music outside the Gaiety Theatre. So everything was lovely. And I went into the Dáil to answer a pretty, you know, straightforward question, Ascuelga, because I was Minister for the Gaeltacht at the time. And the next thing, I just felt, you know, the sensations in my body beginning to go. I first of all, started stuttering really badly. I had a stutter when I was a child, and I still have it occasionally when I get tired and things like that. But this was a really bad one. And the next thing, before I knew where I was, all of the power in my limbs was beginning to leave me. The Cáin Comhairle, Sean O'Farrill, asked me, was I OK? First of all, and I said I was going to power on. It was by the second, it was getting worse. And before I knew where I was lying behind. So for your listeners, you know, the benches that the government sit on, I was lying behind one of those. You know, basically, I could hear everything, but I couldn't see anything, and I couldn't speak, and I had no sensation anywhere. And the Dáil was suspended. I could hear what was going on around me. And the next thing, I was in St. James's Hospital in Dublin, receiving treatment. So, look, it had. I've lived with this condition for the last, I suppose, more than 20 years. It went undiagnosed for a long time because I had a number of different episodes and was taken to a number of different hospitals and was told I was tired. I was told that I was working in a very stressful environment, you know, go home and relax. And, of course, I was delighted with that. I thought this is grand. I fought three general elections with it. Eventually, I suppose around maybe 2015, I got the opportunity to be seen in Beaumont Hospital, and I got a diagnosis. And at the time, you know, it felt like the bottom had fallen out of my world when I got my diagnosis. But in other ways, I was actually delighted and relieved because I always knew there was something wrong with me, physically wrong with me, as did my wife. Because, you know, I could see it. It was I could feel it. It wasn't something that I was imagining. You know, I was very fortunate that I was put under the care of Norman Delante, who's a neurologist out in Beaumont, and took him a while, but he landed on a diagnosis. And really then after that I began a journey with epilepsy. That I suppose the most difficult part of it is, and this isn't about woe me, because there are people with way worse conditions than what I have. And you know, there are people with a lot worse neurological conditions than what I have. I remember at the time being told this is the least worst option in terms of neurological, because I knew that it was something neurological, because I used to have violent pins and needles all of the time. And you know, I would have a palsy in my face or a palsy in my, and some doctors were telling me I was just tired. But my own GP here at home in Newcastle West wasn't happy that, you know, that I was just tired. He felt as well, as did my wife, that this is something worse than just being tired. So he referred me on to Beaumont, and I got my diagnosis, and I started a journey then really of medication that was like a roller coaster of, you know, some were terrible, some were really terrible, and some were absolutely diabolical. But I landed on a drug a couple of years ago that thankfully works well for me and has it under control. And I'm in a much better place now in terms of managing the condition that is, you know, it is debilitating, as I said, to the Irish Independent, and it does have its limitations, but it is the least worst option in terms of what I could possibly have. And I know that there's people listening to this that have way worse conditions than I have. And but I just felt that the time was right now, having gone through four general elections, being appointed to cabinet, being in a fairly stressful job, being a cabinet minister twice, to be able to say to people, you know, don't judge a book by the cover. I mean, I had gotten what I felt was a bit unfair criticism over not going to the theatre, not going to the cinema, not going to concerts as much as I'd like to. I just have to manage where it is that I go to in terms of my external environment, the same way as people with diabetes have to manage their sugar. I have to manage external stimuli, and that's why I spoke to Gabia Gatavascaitche in the Irish Independent and just said, like, this is what's wrong with me.
Now, during the incident, before we get to the subsequent treatment and recovery, when you describe yourself as losing the power of your legs and being unable to see but being able to hear, did you lose consciousness at any point?
No, I remember I could hear everything. Like, I couldn't see anything, but I remember the Dublin Fire Brigade lads who came in with the ambulance. I could hear everything, and I could hear my wife on the phone, and the lads that were in the Dáil, the people in my own office were in the chamber. And you know, I know that it's always, these are very difficult for the person that goes through them, but they're way worse for the person looking on at them. Because they're totally helpless. And so before I got the drug that I'm on now, I don't know how many of them I had, you know, and I don't know how long they lasted. But I remember being told in Beaumont that, you know, it's the equivalent. You expend the same amount of energy that, like, as you would do running a marathon. So you're absolutely, totally penned out after it. But I remember hearing everything until... I was until they put me in a position where I was safe and transferred me by ambulance. And the next thing, I woke up in St. James's and I was there for a couple of days.
Is that terrifying?
It is, because, you know, when you can hear everything, but you can't respond to people and you can't see them and you can't speak. I didn't know whether I was going to die or not, to be quite honest about it. And I've often jokingly said at home that I thought I was going to be the first, you know, a table quiz question, who was the first TD to die in the Dáil chamber. But like, I can say that now jokingly, but it took me weeks to recover in terms of the tiredness from that particular one.
But did you know, actually, during it, believe that there was a chance you were dying?
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I thought this one was so big, and this one was lasting so long. And it was so violent and it was so aggressive, and that they couldn't get it under control. I thought that this was it. So I was, there's no point in saying otherwise, I was very afraid. Like, I was terrified that I was going to, you know, I have three small children. I have a wife that, you know, has had to live with this as much as I've had to live with it. My lads have had to live with it. The three children have seen it on more than one of, they've grown up with it because they were all, they were all born after the fact of me receiving a diagnosis. And so they know that there are things that I can't do that give, you know, me headaches. Like some of the headaches that I would get now would be violent. Mine is a bit different. It doesn't manifest itself into, you know, I don't have what people would sometimes regard as the textbook response in terms of epilepsy. Mine is a bit, you know, I get an awful aura of tiredness that comes over me. And luckily, as I say, I haven't got it now for a while. I don't want it ever again. But I get very nauseous, desperate headaches, unbelievable pins and needles. Pins and needles that people will get now from crossing their legs or something like that, that wouldn't even register my scale. My pins and needles would be like if you took a pin and stuck it in the palm of my hand, and you nearly have to shake the blood into coming back. And you know, so mine is different. It's called deep frontal lobe. It doesn't show up in some of the scans. But look, I was very lucky that I was, after the incident in Leinster House, I was admitted to the monitoring unit in Bowman Hospital, where they basically try and precipitate, having episodes. And I was so relieved because up to then, there were still doctors that were disputing the fact that I had it and telling me that I was just tired and that I was under stress and that this really was something that, you know, was of my own making almost. But I remember when my consultant, Norman Delenty, came in and he said, look, I have a bit of news for you. We have confirmed what we said a number of years ago. I was so relieved because I knew then definitively that this is what I had and that it could be managed and that I wasn't imagining it and that I wasn't making it up and that it wasn't something that as I had been accused of by other people of just saying, you know, that this is just tiredness. This was something that I had lived with probably as a child and had gone unnoticed, but had manifested itself as an adult. I was just so relieved to know finally for definite that this is what it was.
And are there precursors to, I don't know what the correct term would be, but let's say an attack. I mean, is it tiredness that can lead to it? Is it stress? Can you tell, I'm getting into dangerous territory?
Oh, I can know. Yeah. So I manage it. Sleep is a big thing with me. And that's probably not a great thing for being a politician, considering I get up on a Tuesday morning at 4:30 or maybe 4:00. So sleep is one, that does affect me. And light is another one. And it's not that I can't go to the cinema or that I can't go to the theatre. I just find going from normal daylight into a darkened room very difficult. I lose a kind of a sensation of, you know, I kind of wobble. But I have no problem with a graduated thing. Like I can manage in the dark. No problem. I can walk around the house in the pitch dark. We live out in the country and I can find my way around the house. Absolutely no problem. But to go from absolute darkness to absolute light or vice versa is a problem for me. And flashes are a problem as well. So look, my team in to work with me in my department and the constituency they've known for quite a while. So they've just managed it, to be honest about it, with myself. You know, photographers are very decent people, you know. If the lads say, look, can you just turn the flashes out? I suppose the worst example of it was I was deputising for Pascal Donoghue when I was Minister of State in the Department of Finance. This is back about 2017, maybe late 2016. And you remember Jack and Vera Duckworth had a kind of a psychedelic Christmas tree, one of these silver yokes that was plugged in and it would turn from pink to purple. So I was down in a hotel, I won't name it because they'll be saying, oh God, why did you name us, in the centre of Dublin, giving a speech one morning for the Department of Finance, and they had a wall of psychedelic Christmas trees turning from pink to purple to blue to green. And they were all singing and dancing Christmas trees. And like, it was just an absolute, an ass load of overstimulus. And I had to be carried out of the place. I literally had to be linked out because I had awful nausea, weakness. And, a, you know, it was like the Artean band was doing a lap of honour in my head. The headache was so bad. But once I got out, I was fine. I didn't have a choice anyway because I had to go into the Dáil and do legislation. So, you know, those kind of things, I just managed them and had to contend with them. And, you know, it is what it is. I think if I was to say to some venues, you know, you there's no requirement for you to have wheelchair accessibility, the public, quite rightly so, would give a right look at me and say, actually, this fella absolutely deluded. But unfortunately, there are thousands of people in Ireland and around the world, there's millions of people who have a photosensitivity for which the level of the disability is not understood. And if you have it, you know, tough, you just stay at home, you don't go to the cinema, you don't go to the theatre. We were once in an aquarium in London on a family holiday, and I thought it was, you know, it was on the nearest thing to a horror show that I have ever been at. It was horrific because, and again, there was no warning or anything like that. You're going from absolute daylight into total darkness and the lights booming off all over the place. And but the other side of that is I went to the Irish exhibition in Osaka in Japan, and it is an exhibition in a darkened environment that really, I suppose, identifies Ireland through the ages from the Stone Age right up to now. And my team in the department said, look, he has a photosensitivity. He won't be able to, but they were able to adjust it, no problem, so that I wasn't going from a completely bright environment at 30 degrees outside into a darkened hole. And it was a gradual thing. And, you know, I said, well, if they can do it here, like, why don't we have it for, you know, people who are photosensitive and have to linger with this thing on their own every day of the week, and there's thousands of people around Ireland with it.
What about that, Patrick? When there's certain illnesses, ailments, conditions that people have that I think they get greeted with a certain level of scepticism. I mean, you, like classically things like being celiac, for those who are, it is deeply debilitating, but there's always a sort of a suspicion of, are you really? Do you get the same thing? Do you get a sort of reaction of, you're just being precious, this is overblown, sure, just get on with it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was told in two different hospitals by two different consultants that there was nothing wrong with me and that I was essentially, you know, tired. And that if I would go home and take a break or change my job, that this would go away. And, you know, that was really like an awful kick in the stomach because I knew there was something physically wrong with me. I could feel it. And in some cases, I could see it. I could see it in my arms. I could see it in my legs. You know, the electrical impulses, and I wasn't making it up. And I think it was really my GP and my wife who said to me, "Look, you can't take this as just that there's nothing wrong with you, that you're tired. We're going to have to keep going." But yeah, so like, I mean, doctors, patients, and doctors differ, and you know, fill in the gaps. Mm. So I just decided, if I didn't have faith in the team in Beaumont, if I lost faith in them, you know, I was at nothing. And I mean, some of the drugs that I was on were horrific. I mean,
how? Because you described some as terrible and some as diabolical. What did they do to you?
Well, I won't name them because I know for some people they work, and everybody's different. And one of the things my neurologist said to me at the start is like, you know, we're going to have to go through a suite of these things. So like some of them, you know, would be very debilitating in terms of they mess up your electrolytes, make you desperately tired, nauseous. Some of them then didn't work at the, you know, at the level that they should have done based on the dosage that I was getting to, you know, to counteract what it was that I was going through. And I actually felt with some of them, they were nearly precipitating the bloody thing. But it was, you know, it was a trial and error thing. And, you know, I think it was really when I went into the monitoring unit after the Leinster House incident a couple of years ago. First of all, I realised I don't have this on my own. There was a group of other adults and some children as well that were there who had exactly the same symptoms as me, exactly the same. And that was a source of huge relief to me, you know, to realise that I wasn't alone and I wasn't making it up, and I didn't, you know, go out looking for this thing or didn't do something to go out getting it. You know, how well I won the lotto on this thing, but I wouldn't win the lotto on bloody Euro Millions. But anyway, I got this. And I have to live with it, but it is under control.
It's an interesting insight, though, isn't it, into the system and the sort of the challenges facing patients. I mean, you at the point that you're describing, senior politician, you're in your 40s, you're literate, erudite, able to fight your own corner, and even still you get skepticism. It says something about those who are at the margins, either in terms of education or in terms of influence or in terms of age or ability. You really have to fight your corner.
You do. And I was lucky that, you know, that my family, my wife in particular, wasn't going to rest on her laurels at this. I mean, I was told in one Dublin hospital, there's no neurologist on call, but we do have a psychiatrist. So, you know, you can be seen by a psychiatrist. And I thought that was just the pits like, and, you know, that was really the lowest point of it when he told me there was no neurologist, but there was a psychiatrist there. And I said to him, "You think I'm mad, don't you?" And he wouldn't answer me. And then the next thing he came back when I decided I'm going to check out of here because I don't need to be here. I may as well be at home than be here. He came in and threw his medical council number at me and said, "You probably need this because I found out who you are and you're probably going to complain about me." So, like, I mean, I often recount that at home and I said, it sure doesn't really matter who's running the health service or who the Minister for Health is or who anybody is. Like, they're never going to change their attitude. Like, and there is a big attitude problem that, like, some people believe that neurological conditions like the one I have, people make it up. And when you have a senior medical person in a hospital who will come on and doubt you and fling his medical council number at you, you know, that was just a pit. I didn't bother, to be quite honest about it. I had enough to be contending with to try and get myself right and to be able to walk and talk and go about my business and be able to live a normal life and show my three children that, you know, that I was going to be okay and give my wife the support that she needed to make sure that, you know, she could rear a family, have her own job and not be worried about me. And I didn't need this fella's, you know, insulting kind of attitude, to be honest about it. So I put it behind me fairly lively and got myself into the monitoring unit. And I was from there, really, it was a journey of transformation. They thought that it was going to be bad news they were giving me, but they had no idea of the sense of relief that I had and the sense of absolute delight that finally someone has, even though they had given me a diagnosis a number of years earlier and they had always stood over it, but they had no confirmation of it. So that was a massive relief for me.
Lastly, Patrick, can I ask about your decision to talk about it publicly? Because weirdly, I don't think generationally it may be still as much as it once was, but epilepsy is one of those things that classically in Ireland had a stigma around it. I mean, generations ago, if you had epilepsy, you kept it quiet. Why did you decide you wanted to talk about it? Because the initial response after the incident at Dáil was private matter.
Well, it does have stigma about it. And, and as much as though people might like to think that it doesn't, it does. You know, oh, sure, God help him, will he be able to do the job? Like, I think for me now at this stage, saying what I have, I can just point to the fact that I have fought and won 4 general elections, topped the ball in the last one, appointed to the cabinet, have had various different roles in government, stressful, you know, have a huge constituency that I manage, have a big team that I work with, been able to hold down a career totally normal. And I think the straw that broke the camel's back was a certain article in a certain publication that basically said, oh, this guy has never darkened the door of a theatre or has never been in the cinema, and what would he know about culture? And I just thought, I'm hiding this thing for long enough, and I put up with this thing for long enough. And the people who elected me, who I'm answerable to, the people in County Limerick, they need to know that their local representative, their minister, has a disability that I'm not bothered about, to be honest about it anymore. It's under control. It is what it is. But that they shouldn't be reading stuff off of a so-called mainstream broadsheet paper, having a go at me, feeling that, Jesus, did Simon Harris make the wrong decision appointing Patrick O'Donovan as culture minister? Sure, he never goes to the cinema. So I just felt that, like, there comes a point where you have to stand up for yourself, and that was the point. I just felt that the line of fairness had been crossed. I didn't go out looking for this. I didn't want it. You know, my family didn't want it. My wife and kids certainly didn't want it. I'd do anything to get rid of it. but I can't, so I have to live with it. You know, I think if the same journalist said about a person in a wheelchair, oh, we've never seen him in Croke Park, or we've never seen him in Lansdowne Road, or we've never seen him in the Tree Arena, I think, to be quite honest about it, people like you would be calling for a head, and it wouldn't be mine. And I feel, to be quite honest about it, I'm very aggrieved about it.
Minister, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Minister Patrick O'Donovan, Minister for Arts, Culture, Communications, Media and Sport.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.